The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from AARP, the magazine, and the bulletin. Let's start with an article under the AARP book excerpt. And for my next trick, how performing magic as a kid, sometimes badly, set me up for a great career of comedy and pratfalls. And this is by Dick Van Dyke. A lot of comedians got their start doing magic. Johnny Carson, Steve Martin, Jason Alexander, and yours truly. Some people say it's because magic tricks and jokes are kind of the same structure. Setup, build, punchline, or poof. Once you have that rhythm in your bones as a performer, it's a natural crossover. My love of trickery started when I was just a little kid and saw a magic show for the first time. Some folks can just enjoy the illusion and leave it at that, but I was in the category of kid who needed to figure out how it was done. At first, I just experimented on my own, hiding things in my sleeve, building a secret panel inside an old top hat. But I didn't get far without an instruction book. Luckily, my mother picked up on my new interest, and for Christmas that year, I got a whole magic set. I practiced all the tricks for hours in front of the mirror. Pretty soon, I really got good at palming things, coins, handkerchiefs, cards. There was a bowl and water trick I loved, too. For many Christmases after that, I got a new magic set with a fresh set of tricks to master. This was the Depression, so the magic kit was the only present I got, which was fine by me. When I was around 12, I took my act public, setting up my little table of tricks at the ladies' lunches held at our local Kiwanis Club. I pulled in $3 a show. Being mothers themselves, the ladies were an adoring and forgiving audience. They dutifully gasped and tittered as coins vanished behind my handkerchief and reappeared behind their ears. But looking back, it felt like maybe there was another layer to their delight with me. They seemed surprised that a 12-year-old boy could be so warm and well-spoken. I was connecting with them not as mothers, but as people, maybe even peers. As a performer, I realized I was learning the power of charm. After that, I discovered another key element of the magician's persona. Cool. Oddly enough, there was a club of hobbyist magicians in Danville, Illinois, adult men, local store owners, and businessmen, and they got wind of my talent from their wives, I guess, and invited me to join them. I was all of 13 at the time, the only kid in the club, and right away they made me their project. Their technical tips were amazing, many beyond my abilities. And they showed me how to keep my pre-trick patter feeling fresh. But most important were their lessons in demeanor. As successfully as I had charmed the Kiwanis ladies, the men spotted in my act tiny hints of struggle, a card fumble here, a stammer there, that would, if unchecked, accumulate into a fatal failure of audience trust, meaning they wouldn't buy my illusions. If I couldn't stop myself from sweating, my magic elders declared I needed to get better at hiding it. So it was then that I began to cultivate an air of composure. At home and at magic club practices, I worked to make every little wrist movement graceful, every word assured, until the elders were finally impressed. Not long after this suave persona was born, though, it was thoroughly dismantled. At around 15, I landed my biggest venue yet for performing my magic at the high school assembly, an audience of 1,400 students. At Danville High, assembly was a showcase for the performing arts, whether it was a traveling orchestra or a drama club skit. It was a cherished part of our school culture, and everyone took their performances very seriously. For my act, I decided on an illusion I had recently mastered and felt sure would wow, the egg bag trick, which involved making an egg disappear in a magic bag. At home, I hollowed out two raw eggs by poking holes in either end, then blowing out the yolks. I practiced the trick, and my patter turned on the charm and kept my cool. As I strode on stage, my smile easy and assured, I was pretty sure I was making the right first impression. I set the bag and the two eggs on a table and then launched into my intro, feeling each syllable as I hit it. Then, in my peripheral vision, I detected some unexpected movement. But I knew that faltering equaled death, so I kept my gaze ahead and continued talking. Then my brain processed what I had just glimpsed, my two eggs slowly rolling across the table. And even then, I didn't break composure. Only when I heard a nervous titter from the audience, followed by a pair of sad little crunches on the stage floor, did I give in to the reality of failure. I followed my audience's eyes over to my eggs, cracked, misshapen, and saggy. I felt total shame. With that, the giggles turned into guffaws and hoots, roaring through the auditorium. I turned back to face the crowd, and in that split second, though I didn't consciously know it at the time, I made a pretty big discovery about myself. Yes, cool and charming can be a winning bit, but maybe it's only the setup. With that carefully constructed persona cracks and falls apart, it's funny as hell, and maybe that's what my magic act really is. On instinct, I let this new persona spread its wings. Others might have skulked into the wings, humiliated. Instead, I took a deep bow, then walked triumphantly off the stage as if nothing had gone wrong at all. The crowd went wild. This time, I really had them. All these years later, now that I see my bridge from magic to comedy, it's as bright as the Vegas Strip. In trying at magic, I found my tools and ingredients as a performer. In failing at magic, I landed the role of a lifetime. I mean, what is Rob Petrie's Ottoman trip, if not the perfect of the high school egg fail? And this was adapted from 100 Rules for Living to 100, an optimist guide to a happy life by Dick Van Dyke, published November 18, 2025. An Emmy, Tony, and Grammy winner, Van Dyke, who turns 100 on December 13th, starred or appeared in dozens of movies, TV shows, and plays, including the classic films Mary Poppins and Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. Now, at this point, I'm going to go over to AARP The Bulletin and their lead story, Fraud 2026, Your Guide to Spotting Scams, which we started last time. I'm going to start with a sidebar article, Your AARP, Where We Stand. Helping you fight fraud, AARP offers many tools to keep you safe from scams. The Fraud Watch Network website offers tip sheets on common scams and a map showing fraud activity in your area. Visit aarp.org/fraudwatchnetwork. Free National Helpline. 877-908-3360 connects you with trained specialists who provide free confidential guidance. That number again, 877-908-3360. Our state offices will host a nationwide anti-fraud campaign featuring workshops and local events. Go to aarp.org/fraud safety. The Perfect Scam is a podcast that explores fraud with voices of victims and law enforcement. Go to aarp.org/theperfectscam for episodes. And finally, AARP members can visit aarp.org/Norton-benefits to save on identity, theft, and device protection plans from Norton. Helping you fight fraud. It often begins quietly, an unexpected message, a call that sounds official, a request that feels urgent enough to override doubt. Fraud rarely announces itself. It slips into ordinary moments disguised as hope, grief, or good intention. That is how Katie, 67, from Montana, found herself in a situation that escalated faster than she could have imagined. What began as an online message turned into violent threats backed by AI-generated videos. "I am a confident user of technology," she told me, "but this went beyond anything I associated with fraud." Katie's experience is not rare. "I have seen similar situations unfold among people in my life, and the data confirms the threat. More than 40% of American adults have lost money to fraud or had their sensitive information stolen and misused, according to an AARP survey." Fraud affects people across all income levels and backgrounds. It is driven by organized criminal networks using sophisticated tools. It has become a systemic threat, one AARP confronts every day through prevention, victim support, consumer protection, and advocacy. Because the consequences are devastating. Fraud can drain life savings and cause lasting emotional harm. It erodes trust, even in oneself. Many are left bearing shame for something not their fault. Though fraud can strike quickly, the effects linger long after. That is why, at AARP, we emphasize a simple but powerful approach. Pause, reflect, protect. Creating space to slow down and reach out for help can interrupt even the most persuasive attempt. But prevention is not enough. When fraud occurs, connection matters. Lori, 57, from North Carolina, knows this firsthand. After experiencing a romance scam, she joined the AARP Fraud Victim Support Group. Speaking openly about what happened marked a turning point. Lori transformed that experience into advocacy, sharing her story on Capitol Hill to help strengthen laws and better protect others. Janie, 66, and Bruce, 77, from Texas, called AARP's helpline after a tech support scam convinced them to move their savings through a series of steps that felt official. "We thought we were protecting ourselves," they told us. Our Fraud Watch Network volunteer helped them understand what happened and reassured them that they were not alone. "We know the effects of fraud rarely stop with one person. They ripple through families and communities, which is why our resources are designed to help everyone, whether you were targeted or are helping a loved one pick up the pieces. We also advocate for stronger laws and enforcement to disrupt criminal networks, protect consumers, and ensure fraud is treated with the seriousness it demands. We listen closely to people's stories and carry them forward into policy and prevention, because fraud cannot be addressed if it remains unspoken." Katie, Lori, Janie, and Bruce shared their experiences so others might spot the warning signs sooner. Let go of shame and know they are not alone. Fraud is a crime. Speaking up is an act of strength. And when we acknowledge it, talk about it, and look out for each other, we take back control. Now we have red-hot scams to avoid in 2026. Be warned. Scammers are always refining their tactics. Here's what to watch for now. This is by Ken Budd. The caller said he worked for a company helping people recover lost benefits. "Our records show you may have $5,286 waiting in a federal assistance check," he said in a message to phones nationwide. The call directed people to a website where they were deceived into revealing personal data used to steal their identities. Over 2 months in late 2025, the Better Business Bureau received more than 800 complaints about the calls. Relief check fraud is just one of the scams to watch out for this year. Here are five more scams to avoid. Employment scams. U.S. employers laid off more than 1.2 million workers in 2025, the most since the 2020 pandemic. With so many Americans seeking work, employment scams are surging, and desperate job hunters may be more susceptible than in the past to fraud. including bogus jobs and online ads on job search websites and on social media. Some scammers impersonate real recruitment agencies and companies. Their goal? To obtain personal information or money by requiring you to pay a fee. How to stay safe? Never pay. If you're required to pay for a job interview, it's a scam. Distrust big promises. Guarantees of great pay and few hours while working at home are probably red flags not to ignore. Scrutinize the source. If a so-called recruiter contacts you, check the company's website and see if they're hiring for that particular position and if the person actually works there. Be careful about posting your resume. Criminals can use information included there to manipulate you. Recovery scams. Being victimized is awful. Being re-victimized is even worse. That's what happens with recovery scams. Criminals promise to help victims recoup their losses, then charge fees for non-existent services or ask for personal or financial information. Recovery scammers might be the same criminals who victimized you initially, but this time they claim they're from a government agency, a consumer agency group, or a law firm. I think we're going to see a lot of recovery scams in 2026, says Amy Nofsinger, Senior Director of Victim Support with the AARP Fraud Watch Network. How to stay safe? Reject upfront fees. Criminals charge you in advance and ask you to pay with gift cards, cryptocurrency, or Venmo. Beware of phony checks. Scammers might send a counterfeit check, often for more than what you lost. Then they'll say they overpaid and instruct you to return the balance. Do your homework. Search the recovery firm's name using keywords such as scam, fraud, or complaint. Digital arrest. The process is terrifying. You're informed that you're the subject of a criminal investigation. Fake law enforcement officers interrogate you for days on video calls, threatening you with criminal charges, sending AI-generated phony arrest warrants, and pressuring you to pay settlement or fines. It's a terror-based scam that involves holding a person digitally captive. They'll get you in a video call, and they won't let you go, says Frank McKenna, Chief Innovation Officer with Point Predictive, an AI technology company in San Diego. Digital arrest is a major problem in India. In September 2025, a retired doctor there died from a heart attack after enduring nearly 70 hours of harassment. And it's spreading to the United States, McKenna reports. How to stay safe? Hang up. Law enforcement doesn't call people and threaten to arrest them, McKenna says. Know how the system works. Court orders and arrest warrants are not delivered through phone calls, emails, or social media. Hello, pervert scams. In this insidious scam, criminals claim they've hacked your computer and recorded your visiting porn sites. If you don't pay them, they'll share evidence of your naughty behavior with your email contact list. They might even spoof your email address so it appears that the blackmailer is contacting you through your own account. The AARP Fraud Watch Network supports a spike or reports a spike in these scams. People can be very fearful of getting a bad reputation if someone believes they're watching porn or sending nude photos. Scammers exploit that fear. Pervert scams also tend to follow data breaches. Crooks use your info to create highly personalized messages, making the threat seem more legitimate. How to stay safe? Never respond. If you reply, scammers will likely send more messages. Don't open unsolicited attachments. Blackmail messages are frequently sent as PDFs to bypass phishing filters. And then stay calm. Ignore deadlines to pay money. Urgency is a scam tactic to force rash decisions. And finally, we have self-publishing scams. There's a growing market among older Americans to write their memoirs and seek a publisher for their life story, to share with friends and family. That can be a satisfying pursuit, but be careful. Publishing scams are growing. Some scammers pose as literary agents. Others create fake publishing companies that take your money but never publish your work. In a complaint to the AARP Fraud Watch Network, a victim said she wired $6,000 to a self-publishing company but never received the book. When she called, the number no longer worked. How to stay safe? Know how talent agents operate. Writers never pay agents to represent them. Agents receive a percentage of advances and payments. Ignore unsolicited emails. Legit agents and publishers will not contact unknown authors. And scrutinize URLs. Fake publishers often use variations of real company names to seem respectable, so study the web links. The author of this piece, Ken Budd, is a journalist who frequently writes about fraud for AARP. Now let's go back to AARP, the magazine, for something a little more cheerful. And next time I'll continue with the fraud information. Let's look at real people. Inspiring stories of friends and neighbors in their own words. This one is entitled Machine Maker, Robots for All. In Dennis Hong's laboratory, students explore the frontier between science and science fiction. Everyone thought I was crazy. In 2010, I made the miniature humanoid robot, Darwin OP. And then I made its programming code, blueprints, and other information freely available for anyone to read, copy, or adapt. My goal was never to patent and sell this robot. It was to expand knowledge. Today, thousands of Darwins, that's capital D, capital A, capital R, little W, capital I, little N, and S, help teach robotic locomotion and autonomous action in labs around the world. Someone even put instructions online for 3D printing your own robot. My students and I have created some 50 unique robots here at UCLA. Some jump like spiders, others roll like amoebas. We've designed robots to fight fires and deliver food to the homeless. Artemis, another creation, was originally the fastest walking humanoid robot in the world. As with Darwin, we're making the design of Artemis open source, which will accelerate its development, to hopefully bring us closer to the time when robots can help us in our daily lives. To do this work, you have to understand mechanics and algorithms, but robotics is so much more than that. It's also about imagination, storytelling, even beauty. I bring robots into the world not just as machines that do tasks, but as companions that inspire wonder. That same wonder I felt seeing Star Wars for the first time. The droids R2-D2 and C-3PO blew my mind as a kid, and now I'm building their descendants. The 2025 Netflix film The Electric State features a sentient robot made with CGI. But for press events, the filmmakers wanted a functioning character, an actual robot, so they came to my lab and we made them one. This blurring of the line between robotics and art is what I'm most excited about. Even though I'm getting older, inside I feel younger than my students. I always tell them that if you're not working joyfully, you're not maximizing your potential. And this article was as told to Greg Siegel. Roboticist Dennis Hong, 54, is a professor at the UCLA School of Engineering and director of Romila Robotics and Mechanisms Laboratory in Los Angeles. Next, People Riding to Win, the unstoppable Marcia Garcia. This veteran ATV racer faces chronic pain with a competitor's resolve. The first time I got on an ATV, I loved everything about it, the wind in my face, and the freedom to go fast and not worry about anything. Then I went to an ATV race, and even though I was married with kids, I said, I want to do that. And I did. I entered my first race when I was 31. I'm 55 now, and there's still nothing like suiting up, putting on your goggles, hearing those bikes rev up with gas, and seeing that flag go up. Now I've had my pity parties. A few years ago, I developed a striking pain toward the back of my head that got more intense over the years, but none of the doctors had an answer, and medications didn't help. Then one day, I scratched my head and felt what seemed like a bolt of electricity shoot through my face. A neurologist finally diagnosed me with a nerve disorder called trigeminal neuralgia, TN, which mostly affects women over 50 and has no cure. TN is often called the suicide disease because that stabbing pain in the face is so horrific that a lot of people say they don't want to live. I was the opposite. I was like, what are we going to do about it? So I started TN Warrior Racing, a nonprofit that raised awareness about the disease so people can get it diagnosed early and be part of a community. The racing in the name is just a way to highlight my own story and let people know that life is not over because you have TN or any chronic disease. Racing makes me feel unstoppable. I tell myself, if I can get out there for 50 minutes at high speed, I can take on my pain. I want others to feel that kind of motivation. Just keep out from under the covers and keep pushing. Anything you do is a win. And this story was as told to Bridget Riley. Veteran amateur ATV racer Marcia Garcia, 55, is an event facilitator in Goodyear, Arizona. Now, before we say goodbye today, we have time for a couple of more money-saving tips. This one's under entertainment. Take advantage of new credit card perks. If it's been a while since you've browsed what your card offers, you're likely leaving money on the table. Issuers are constantly updating their perks. You may be surprised to find some issuers have added discounts on food delivery, ride hailing, and music and video streaming, as well as pre-sale tickets for concerts and shows. Buy discounted gift cards. Many big box retailers and credit card issuers, particularly during holiday promotions, offer deals on gift cards for restaurants, travel, movies, and more. You could save $20 to $25 on a gift card package worth $100 to a casual pizza chain, for example. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. I do hope you've enjoyed listening. Please join me next time. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.